Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Oh, wait, I'm about to burp.
Oh, geez. That would not be good.
Hello, welcome. This is Dr. Deborah.
Crazy Dr. Hello. Deborah. And this is Therapist Kelly.
So that's never happened before. I literally was about to burp when it was my cue to say hello.
When we first started the show, I don't know if I was... Oh, the hiccups. That's what it was.
Right. And I think I told you, Chris had the hiccups for 3 days straight once.
That's amazing.
I'm still traumatized by it. I tried one of my tricks. We couldn't get rid of them.
Yeah.
Hiccuping all night. I'm like, he doesn't remember it.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Oh my goodness. So, well, I'm sorry that I wasn't here last week. I couldn't listen or anything. The fires were just scarier than all scary.
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
I'm so sorry.
We were like in this little protected cove almost, you know, where the wildwood behind our house, park is just amazingly filled with brush and just ready to go up in flames at any moment. And the wind was just in our favor the whole time. No, in our favor. So it was unbelievable.
Wow. That's terrifying.
It was terrifying. And we were ready to go at all times. We had
bags
packed at the door, in the car, at the door, because I didn't want to drive around with all my valuables either. So Chris and I tag teamed. Somebody was always at home, you know, on alert for the kitty cat.
Right.
In the midst of that, we had to take Prowler to his vet checkup, by the way. He's up a pound and a half.
That's amazing.
I know.
So good.
It's cancer. He's doing really well. He's eating like a horse. Literally, we make about 2 pounds of tilapia for him every day, and eats it. And then he wants turkey, and then he wants fancy feasts.
Oh, my God. This is hilarious.
It's hilarious. He's like a little
king,
like a little binger now.
I love it.
So cute.
He needs it.
I know. So thankfully, we're safe. And all those out there who are not safe or lost their homes, we are so sad and sorry for you, for sure.
Yeah.
How about you, Buttercup? You just told me something fun.
Yes. So I decided to take boxing lessons. And oh, my God. First of all, I'm like the most uncoordinated person ever.
You say that. Things about yourself.
No, I'm dead serious. You can ask this trainer. I'm giving him like his money's worth. I'm like, he's like, pivot and do this. And I'm like, I can't do two things at once. Like, so, but it's super fun and I'm having a great time. And this weekend was good. I went to a dinner party with a friend of mine. She had some people over and there was a guy there that was hilarious. And I just love funny people.
Yes,
so like I ate it up and we had a ball. And like we were talking about how I can't cook, and it was just like the, you know, most of the people there could cook, so it was just very funny. And then I had like a spiritual kind of ceremony. I'm in this like spiritual group, and I had this like beautiful ceremony on Sunday. And so so it's like I got my humor on, I got my spirituality on, I got my exercise. So
you are a well-rounded chick.
I'm taking care of myself.
Well, you have to, because you've got the little monsters all weekend.
Exactly. That's right? Exactly why.
The whole week, you said.
Yes.
Oh,
the
my
whole
goodness.
Week. Yes, I know. Look at your face. Well, that's why we're going on a cruise, because I'm like, bon voyage, mofos.
But that's going to be great, because they have so many kid activities on cruise ships.
Exactly.
Yeah, especially because you're going on the carnival. That's like very child friendly.
Well, and it's like they can't leave. They're not going to get lost. I mean, knowing my kids, they will, but they'll find me. They'll be all right.
They'll find you.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So we're just kind of hanging around in town, helping out another family who's having some other guests over, you know, due to the fires and things like that. So
sweet.
Yeah. All right. So you tell us about our guests.
Oh, yeah.
Last
last week, one of my favorites, Dr. Syeda Desilets. She is the author of Desire, Turning Our Attention Towards Our True Desires Can Open Up the Doors to Fully Live Life on Our Own Terms. And she's just a really beautiful, like, vibrant guest. And we had a really open and candid conversation about sex and desire and genders, and it was great.
So what was the conclusion?
The conclusion is women should just be okay with their sexuality. And, you know, we don't need to go into hiding. And she's really about empowering women to, you know, just to feel good in their
bodies. She's the Jade Lady, isn't
she? Yes.
Yes.
And she's just all about it. I love it. I love her confidence, yes. You know, and it's just sort of like, look, I'm here. I'm here to live life to the fullest. How can we do that without shame?
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And let's do the
intro
for our guest today, which is very exciting. We found this guest on the fly. It's so fabulous. Okay. So this is today we have Bryant George, MD, a board certified in neurological surgery, American Board of Neurological Surgery, retired status. He served as the assistant clinical professor of neurological surgery at Tulane University School of Medicine, Department of Neurological Surgery, and as the assistant medical director of Charity Hospital of New Orleans, Louisiana. Dr. George is also a member of Who's Who in American College and universities from Northwestern State University of Louisiana. Due to his expertise in the field of neurological surgery, he is frequently called upon as an expert witness in head trauma cases, and he is here to talk about this brilliant discovery called the Morph device. Welcome, Dr. George.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So, okay, so tell us first basically why this device was created.
The device was created to help people that are addicted to opioids overcome the major obstacle towards seeking and completing treatment, and that is to try to ease withdrawal symptoms. So many people that are addicted to opiates, they're using opiates because they don't want to get sick anymore. It's the withdrawal sickness that keeps the addiction driven and keeps it going. So what the Morph device does, it causes the body to produce its own morphine in the form of endorphins and other neuropeptides. And those endorphins will then attach to those vacant receptors that are present during times of withdrawal and make the withdrawal go away. So we're thinking this is going to be a huge breakthrough in bringing people into treatment and for them to be able to complete the withdrawal and detoxification process in a more humane and comfortable fashion.
That is brilliant. Oh, my gosh. Did you create this Morph device, or was it with a series of other people?
It was with a series of other people. It originally had its roots in Austria and in Europe when people were exploring alternatives for the treatment of pain. And they began to explore the stimulation of the nerve supply in and around the ear. It is derived directly from cranial nerves, and so it's a direct conduit to the brain. And they noticed that the stimulation of the skin of the ear would cause the pain to subside. And so they went on to try to do experiments to try to determine exactly what was going on during that period of time. And they discovered that it was related to the release of endorphins.
Wow. Okay. So does it just reduce the withdrawal symptoms? Does it take it away completely? Can you give us a little bit of, thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, a lot of it takes a really good comprehension of what goes on in the brain during times of withdrawal. It all goes back to the centers deep in the brain that are involved in a dopamine reward system. I heard you talk at the beginning of the show about sexual freedom and allowing yourself to be free. Well, that dopamine reward system was put there by our creator to perpetuate the species. So the dopamine is a feel-good chemical, as you know, Dr. Deborah, that is released as a reward for behavior that is appropriate. So when we eat, we get a dopamine release. When we have sex, we get a dopamine release. And these things perpetuate the species. And so I would assume that that's why our creator put it there. Well, what happens in opioid addiction is that that area of the brain, that dopamine reward system, becomes hijacked by taking exogenous opiates. And that is what leads to when those receptors in the dopamine reward system become vacant, then it stimulates another area of the brain that triggers a withdrawal response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that.
That withdrawal response can be very uncomfortable. It is in a deeper area of the brain called the locus coeruleus, and it's what we call the noradrenergic center, which releases norepinephrine or adrenaline. So you can imagine that there's a racing of the heart. There is anxiety associated with this release of adrenaline. And then we began to make secretions from every orifice in our body. And so the tears begin to run, nose begins to run, diarrhea occurs, abdominal pain, and muscle cramps. And people that are addicted to opioids, this is a very, very uncomfortable feeling. Mm-hmm. So if we replace those vacant receptors with the body's own endorphin, then those withdrawal symptoms will begin to abate. Now, it's been my experience that all of the uncomfortable symptoms associated with withdrawal go away. Sometimes there's still some anxiety that's there, and it can be treated with some comfort medications. But patients overall that compare it to medication-assisted detoxification say that this is, beyond a doubt, a cakewalk.
Far wow, superior. This is amazing.
Yeah, you know, so you know, I work with a lot of families of people with addiction, and as well as the client themselves, and it's really hard sometimes to convince families to really understand that your son, your daughter, your husband, whatever, they can't stop right now. They can't stop on their own. That's dependency. The body requires these drugs, and because they can sometimes be so shaming and make them feel so bad, like, where's your willpower? Why can't you just stop that? Like, oh, let me put you through the pain that your son or daughter or loved one is experiencing, and then you'll really understand. But people without addiction have a really hard time grasping that. So do you help families understand what that component is as well?
Oh, yes. I think that's essential. I think that society as a whole has viewed addiction as a matter of choice, and feel that people that become addicted to drugs are doing so by choice rather than by as a result of some sort of physical reaction that's going on in their bodies and in their brains, and they're not really perceiving it as a disease as they should, and instead as a social choice, and there's a stigmata associated with that that can be detrimental as well and reduce their self-esteem and their feelings of self-worth and so forth.
So is this the type of machine that anyone can get, or is it just in certain rehabs, or how do you plan to market it?
Well, it's something that is physician-driven. You have to have a prescription for it. It is approved by the FDA for use in opioid detoxification, but it has to be under the direction of a physician. The device is worn, you know, normally for short-acting opiates like heroin or hydrocodone, the withdrawal period is usually 5 days. It's worst around the third day. For longer-acting opioids, many times people are put on Suboxone or buprenorphine, as its chemical name is, and that is a longer-acting opioid and takes maybe 7 to 10 days to detoxify from. And then, of course, there's methadone, which may take as long as 21 days.
I see.
Wow. And how big is the opiate crisis in America now?
Well, according to federal estimates by the Department of Health and Human Services, there are 2 million Americans that are addicted to heroin or prescription opioids. Out of that number, 70,000 Americans die. Actually, last year, 70,000 people died from a heroin overdose or an opioid overdose.
Wow.
70,000, that's an astronomical number.
I'll say. And what do you attribute to the rise in opiate? Just more availability, less expensive than other alternatives? What do you think?
Easy access.
Well, you know, sometimes I think it's a combination of things. When the opioid crisis became recognized as a crisis, then it came upon the physicians to cut their use of prescribing opioids. Well, many people already, they've been on it for such a long period of time, when they no longer have their physician prescribing opioids, then they have to go to illicit forms of opioids to deal with their addiction. And so I think all of those things, the overprescribing in the past, having excess medications in the medicine cabinet allows teenagers and young adults to get into it and begin to recreate with it. And before long, it becomes a physically dependent type of situation.
So would this type of device work also for alcohol withdrawal or other drug withdrawals?
Alcohol withdrawal is a different animal. And it works under a different mechanism, and it's not generally recommended to be used for alcohol withdrawal. Alcohol withdrawal can be quite deadly, particularly if the use has been astronomical and they have a history of having alcohol withdrawal seizures, then the severity of the addiction really determines the method of detoxification. But the Morph device in itself, because of the mechanism being different, does not work for alcohol withdrawal.
Okay. So curiously, you being a neurosurgeon, how did you get so involved and interested in the addiction world? Was there a personal story that you want to share or anything?
Well, I practiced neurosurgery for close to 25 years in New Orleans prior to Hurricane Katrina. And Hurricane Katrina not only wiped out my office, my hospital, and my home, but it also wiped out my community. So it didn't leave many patients around to treat. So I just decided, I did try to get it going after Katrina, but just decided that the numbers weren't there and that I was in a position to retire early, and I did. But I eventually got bored fishing and golfing and decided to get involved again with the once the opioid crisis presented itself. And I just started dabbling in it, and my services became more and more demanding. So I felt like it was a call to arms and a call to duty to get involved.
That's amazing.
Wow. How large is the device itself? Is it...
The device itself is, I want to say, maybe a quarter of an inch wide and maybe 2 inches in length. And it attaches with a stick pad right behind the ear.
Okay.
Out of that device, then, there are four wires, actually. One is a ground, but the three wires actually produce electrical stimulation. And they are attached to different points on the ear, and they have a little pin that pierces the skin for better contact. And they are placed in proximity to where we pick up nerve signals with a little sensor. And they're secured down, and the device is programmed and activated. And I have literally experienced, when I saw this, I was just amazed. A patient going through withdrawal with, say, a COW score, which is a clinical opioid withdrawal scale in the, say, the mid-levels in the 15 range, where they're feeling sick, they're from in there, have abdominal cramps, they're tearing, and they're just very uncomfortable and frowning. Within 10 minutes of applying the device, they're beginning to feel comfortable. And within 30 minutes of applying the device, they're beginning to smile and talk about how good they feel. So it's a pretty dramatic response, and I said, wow, this is a remarkable device, and it's something that's got to be put out there so that people will know that they can detox in a more humane and comfortable fashion, and that's what we're doing.
It's amazing.
It's brilliant.
Yeah,
this
it really
like a
is.
A miracle. It's like it's going to change the entire industry
it really
of treating
will.
Addiction.
Yeah.
Well, I think what it does is it changes the perspective in helping people by manipulating receptors. Because after the Morph device in itself is not a cure for opioid addiction. This is just to help a patient get through the detoxification period. We still have to manipulate those receptors after they've become detoxified. And we do that by giving them what we call an antagonist, which blocks those opioid receptors and occupies them so that there's no craving. And it's worked very well. So after the patient is detoxified, they're given an injection of a medication called Vivitrol or naltrexone extended release, and it blocks those receptors and stops them from craving. And even if they were to slip and, say, use an opioid, they would get no response because their receptors are blocked, so they would get no dopamine release.
I see.
So patients are put on that, and then they're put through cognitive behavioral therapy, which, as you know, is very essential to this process to try to help the rewiring of the process of being opioid-free.
Wow. Yeah, and I'll also pull a plug for DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy, which actually has some added components that combine CBT as well as mindfulness and learning excellent self-regulation skills, because all of it has to go hand in hand. I mean, historically, for all depression, anxiety, all those treatments, they all the studies show that it's a combination of the psychotherapy plus the medicines and the holistic approach that really has the best outcome.
Well, this electrical neuromodulation of the brain is becoming more and more prolific, and they're finding that transcranial stimulation even helps in some cases of depression that's refractory to some medications and to behavioral counseling. So this is new technology, and I think we're going to see more and more of this as time goes on.
And is it painless?
Yes, it's pretty painless. The patients will sometimes say they feel electrical pulsing, okay. But it's not a painful thing. It's something that they become acclimated to eventually, and it stopped. But then they wonder if the device is still working. But it's not a painful process at all. But it may produce a little pulsing type of sensation that they feel, but it's not an uncomfortable thing.
So, are you aware of another treatment? A treatment option for depression called TMS?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's considerably different because patients report that TMS is quite uncomfortable. It's almost like a woodpecker in the head.
Oh.
And it's for patients who have been unsuccessfully treated with standard medications.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have that quick of a result either. Is there anything else you could say about that?
Well, not really. That's not really my area of expertise, and I don't want to delve into the psychiatric and psychological treatments for various therapies, particularly depression, which is outside of my area of emphasis. But I can say that what's different about the Morph device is that it only requires very low frequencies, as opposed to this transcranial stimulation, which is probably high frequency because it's not really specific to a nerve. It's trying to encompass the whole brain. Whereas this device, the electrodes are placed very close in proximity to nerves so the frequency is relatively low. It's like 2 hertz to really get an endorphin response, say 4 hertz to get enkephalins going, and 100 hertz to get dynorphins, which is the final neuropeptide that occupies some of these opioid receptors. The opioid receptors, though, are primarily the mu receptors that are occupied by beta endorphins, which are released at a very low frequency of 2 hertz.
So I want to play devil's advocate for a second. So I imagine some people say,
sure.
Well, if we make it easier for people to not go through the withdrawal, then more people are going to, once they get treatment, they're going to want to go back out again because it's like, well, you know, it wasn't so bad to detox. And do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I find that most people that are ready to take that step, I mean, people that are out there recreating and having fun, they're not going to be really candidates to become opioid-free because they're still enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, people get worn out with that, and they are just using to avoid getting, quote-unquote, dope sick.
Yep, right.
And, you know, they're sick and tired of it. That's the only thing that drives them to keep using. They're driven to be well and to be free of their opioid addiction. Those are the people that's going to respond to detoxifying with this. I'm very doubtful that someone is going to want to detox with a device and then go out and use again for purposes of just recreating. Now, there is relapse associated with any sort of opioid treatment. So I think that we have to focus on what prevents relapse, and by using the extended-release naltrexone to block those receptors, we take away cravings. And then lastly, to do the cognitive behavioral therapy where patients are made aware of the three things that lead to relapse being stress, triggers and cues, and exposure.
Yeah.
And with that cognitive therapy, they're given 2 tools basically to combat that, and that is avoidance and anticipation. So if you really want to stay clean, you have to avoid people's places and things, and you'll have to anticipate having an exposure.
Right.
You know, you run into the dope dealer somewhere at the gas station, and he says, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. Here, try this bag and let me know how you like it. Well, anticipate that happening and have your response ready in advance so you're not caught off guard.
Right.
There's a lot of things that go on in this, and it's not just a one-step process, and it's not a cookbook approach. Everybody has to have an individualized approach to becoming opioid-free. Many times people have been discarded by their families. They have homeless situations. They have job situations. They need all of these things to help re-enter into a normal society again and be productive and have feelings of self-worth and contributing. Right. So there's a lot going to it that's outside of the medical arena as well. And all of those things need to be addressed concomitantly.
And also, Kelly, in addressing what you stated, I think, you know, as you know, that one of the hardest components of working with somebody who's recovering from addiction is that part of the brain that says, well, I can become the person who can use recreationally.
Yes.
So that is a serious draw because it's like, oh, now, like you're saying, now that I'm well, so I'm going to go dabble like my brother. Mm-hmm. And guess what? You're going to dabble yourself right into overdose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, yes. Yes, because now that they've become opioid-free, their brain is acclimated to that, and they're much more sensitive. So if they go back to using what they were using before, then they're more likely to suffer an overdose.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go ahead.
I just believe that patient education is very important, and to sit down and talk to patients and let them know what's going on in their brains and what they're experiencing and what they're feeling helps them to participate in this process. They understand what's going on, and they're aware of it when it occurs. And, patient education is important. You can't just have a patient come in and says, I'm going to do this, and this is what's going to happen, and this is how you're going to be. They have to understand the process.
Absolutely. So I want to switch gears for one second because I'm so curious how you became a neurosurgeon. And did you always know when you were little you wanted to be a doctor? Like, I'm just so fascinated by it.
Actually, no. I graduated from undergraduate school, knew I wanted to go to medical school. I had to work for a little bit just to kind of get a few things that I didn't have before. I got my Datsun 280Z with my 5-speed overdrive transmission and my own apartment for a little while I worked and saved a little bit of money. Well, during that process, I made rounds with positions at a hospital. And it just so happened that one of the ladies that I saw on that day had a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And she was very stoic, and I felt like I could talk to her. So once the doctor left, I stayed in the room and had some conversation with her. Well, while I was in there talking to her, the neurosurgeon came in, and he began to examine her and prepare her for surgery the next day. And so when we walked out of the room, he said, would you like to come see the surgery? Mm-hmm. I said, sure. So that next morning, I went in and I watched him remove that brain tumor, and I said, I think I want to do that.
Wow.
And that's how it all started. So I wanted to be a neurosurgeon going into medical school, which was kind of unusual. But prior to that, I was just a regular guy, a regular student. I think I really came out of nowhere from the standpoint of my parents thinking they were bringing up a brain surgeon. So I think it was a surprise to them.
That's so cool.
I'm sure it was a welcome surprise.
A pleasant surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe just to expand the knowledge base for our audience, we could talk a little bit about the difference between abuse of a substance versus dependency of a substance on a substance.
Well, I think that the distinction lies in tolerance and the occurrence of withdrawal. You can abuse a substance and stop using it and may not have had enough frequency of use to really have any withdrawal symptoms. However, most people that continue to use will develop a tolerance to the medication or to the drug, which then leads to more and more use and eventually leads into a physical dependency type of situation where withdrawal sickness occurs if they try to stop. So the difference between abuse and addiction, I think, rests in the concept of tolerance and physical dependence.
Mm. Yeah, you explained that very simply. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. What about the psychological dependence, though?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, I said, what about the psychological dependence?
Well, the other drugs like marijuana and some cases, methamphetamine and cocaine, they don't have a physical withdrawal symptom associated with them other than the fact that they may be depleting dopamine sources and have a period of somnolence after they stop using, but there's no true withdrawal sickness like with the opioid addiction. So other drugs, yes, I think that they may be developing some tolerance from time to time, but they don't necessarily lead to an actual physical withdrawal symptom. And that's the real, when people say there's a monkey on your back with heroin use, that's the real monkey. Yeah. It's the withdrawal symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what makes opioid addiction a little bit of a different animal than recreational drugs that there may be a psychological dependence where, oh, I'm not going to have fun unless I smoke marijuana.
Right.
So they do it just for that purpose.
Right. And also with opiate dependence, I mean, it's so tragic for so many people because they try to hide it. You know, they're so embarrassed to say, especially if they, you know, had an injury like a broken leg and they were prescribed and they continue to use and maybe they start to use a little bit more.
I know that's really tragic,
it's
too.
Tragic.
And that's because of society. Even with alcohol addiction, those things are diseases. They're not really a social stigmata as we've labeled them. And so as a result of that, people are ashamed and are reluctant to come out with the exposure that they are dependent. And that leads to less treatment. You know, and I like to tell some of your listeners, too, that may be using heroin, that when they buy a little bag on the street of white powder, they have no idea what's in that. They think they're buying a little bag of heroin, but there's no telling what's in that.
That's for
and
sure.
I'm going to say a lot of it is probably not compatible with ingestion or injecting into your body. But that is the, I think that in the opioid addiction arena that people become disconnected from their prefrontal lobes where our biological intelligence is located. And they don't care about consequences, so they don't care that they're cooking in a dirty spoon that's full of bacteria. They don't care that they're using a dirty syringe. They don't care that they could be the last time they put that needle in their arms,
right?
Because they're disconnected from understanding what consequences are.
Right.
And that's what the cognitive behavioral therapy does, is to try to get them reconnected to understand that if I relapse, there are consequences. And, you know, if I do this, there are consequences. And it's just getting that and biological intelligent portion of the brain reconnected to that dopamine reward system to try to modulate it.
So if you just tuned in, we're talking with Dr. Bryant George. He is a neurosurgeon, and he is here to talk about the Morph device, which is recently FDA approved, and it's to help with the opiate crisis and helping with detox and withdrawal.
And Dr. George, how available is this device? I mean, how many rehabs across the country have adopted this, or is it really brand new and you're just trying to get the word out there?
Well, it's been out there for a while, but I think that it's just recently gotten its FDA approval for use in opioid detox. And so it's just starting to hit the treatment centers and whatnot, and we're doing the best that we can to get the word out to all of the physicians and healthcare providers at various detox centers to know that. And I think it will help them because there's probably a 30-40% attrition rate of people detoxing from opioids. They get so sick, they said, I had enough, I'm going to go out here and use, and they leave against medical advice. So if we put a device, a Morph device, on each and every one of these opioid-addicted patients, then they're detoxing comfortably, and they're not throwing up and having diarrhea and cramped over and muscle pain and ache, then they know that they can detox very comfortably and get on to the next stage of treatment. So we're hoping it brings more people into treatment and that it retains people that do decide to come in for treatment.
And what about insurance? Is insurance able to cover something like this?
That's the next step. That is a bureaucratic process. And as we know, sometimes bureaucracy turns very slow.
Yeah.
It requires, number one, the insurance companies getting on board with it, particularly Medicare or Medicaid, and then for the Central Medicare Services or CMS to price the device so that there's a reimbursement associated with its use.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, there is no insurance reimbursement for the device. But again, you know, parents are spending, say, $5,000 to $7,000 for a 5 to 7 day hospitalization for detoxification. So if the device is only costing $500, then that seems like it would be money that would be well spent and allocated towards assisting in the process.
Yeah. Well, you just answered my question. I was going to ask you just how costly is it? So it's really about $500 per device.
Yes.
Wow. Well, I will certainly be a spokesperson out here in Southern Cal with all the rehabs that I've been connected to.
I mean, this
Well, I'd love to get together with you at some time and even demonstrate the device, and we can go out to a center together and really, I would love to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious.
Yes.
Oh, I was going to say, so someone who's not going through withdrawal symptoms, like if I just put the device on, would it do anything for me? I'm so curious.
You dopamine junkie.
If you're, people that that abuse opiates, many times they are smokers. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, they say that, and sometimes they're overeaters. Mm-hmm. Sometimes though, patients will tell me, says, you know, I really only smoke, you know, 2 or 4 cigarettes a day. So their desire to smoke goes down, and a desire to overeat. You know, there's dopamine surges associated with eating as well. And so I think by modulating that dopamine reward system, then it cuts down on some other vices. But that's just an anecdotal story. That's not something that I'm really advocating, that we use it for nicotine addiction or overeating.
Well, you see, Kelly, actually, she's a closet dark chocolate addict.
Obsessed.
Literally, she goes in the closet
and eats it because I don't want my kids to see. But yes, I'm curious.
I'm sorry, Kelly. There's no help for you.
Nothing. Actually, the other day.
Stick to the dark chocolate. I hear it's healthier for you.
Yes, you would know. I mean, but that's why I don't feel as guilty, because it has the antioxidants. I think they've done studies to show
it
helps with stress. So, yeah, I'm okay with it.
Sounds like your frontal lobe is working.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's very interesting. Yeah. Who knows? I think it may have some applications later on in the chronic pain or acute pain arena, because this endorphin release can provide a non-opioid alternative for the treatment of pain. So we're hopefully at some point, I'd just like to attack this opioid crisis, but the two things that the nation is facing right now is to deal with the opioid crisis in a manner that's going to be beneficial, and secondly, is to find a non-opioid alternative for the treatment of pain. And so I think as time goes on and there may be more developments in the device, that it may be something that will be useful for treatment of pain, that's use your own endorphins rather than some exogenous opiates.
I could see this being very relevant to maybe the treatment of fibromyalgia, arthritis, autoimmune disorders.
It's very interesting you say that, because I do have a hypothesis on that, and I don't want to, you know, go into too much, esoteric detail about it. But, you know, fibromyalgia, I tell patients about pain is that when you have pain, it's usually because you've had tissue damage. This is from a noxious stimulus, and that tissue damage causes the release of some chemicals like substance P and bradykinins and leukotrienes that stimulate nerve endings that cause the perception of pain up to the brain. Well, if you don't have a noxious stimulus going on, then you shouldn't be having pain. And in fibromyalgia, we don't have a noxious stimulus going on, but patients are certainly having pain. And so what they think has happened in that case is that some musculoskeletal injury event has occurred at some point in someone's life, and the brain has learned pain, and it won't let it go. So it keeps perpetuating that pain because it's learned pain, and it keeps cycling it back over in the brain. So something has to be done to break that cycle.
Wow.
And some theorists have used different conceptual thoughts of presenting different colors to try to deal with breaking up this cycle. But actually, the Morph device, I've put it on a fibromyalgia patient, and they said they hadn't felt this great in 25 years.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And they say, well, I'm afraid what's going to happen when the battery wears out in 10 days. So my approach is going to be, it's been shown that if you use the device multiple times, so maybe 5 devices in an 18-month period of time, that you could break that cycle of pain perception, that learned pain up in the brain, hopefully significantly reduce someone's fibromyalgic pain to the point that it's more tolerable and they have a more functional life. So what I'd like to do at some point is to put the device on. I can program this particular device to go on and off at different frequencies. So maybe 3 hours on, 1 hour off, and so forth. And so I would start off with a continuous stimulation, and I would allow, during that patient time, I would allow the patient to engage in physical activity to tolerance that they weren't doing before, because so many fibromyalgia patients have pain avoidance behavior. They don't do things because they know it's going to hurt, or they feel like it's going to hurt. So it modifies their behavior. So if I take away the pain, allow their physical activity to pick up during that period of time that they're wearing the morph device, then it sort of gets them out of that pain avoidance type of situation. If the relief of the pain lasts, say, 2 weeks after the device is taken off, I put another device on, and this time I'll increase the on-off time so that there's more off time and less on time. So you'll get a little bit of endorphin release. And so I'm trying to wean this process on through this whole 18-month period of increasing the length of time that the device is not on and reducing the on-off time when it is on, so that I can just break that cycle of learned pain in the brain. Be interesting to see where that goes. It takes time to get that done, though.
Yeah, I mean, you're actually literally creating a positive feedback loop for somebody, right? It is
exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I should have known that from psychology.
that's why we're here.
Exactly. And then, is there any negative?
Well, I was going to talk about the Pavlov's dogs, just to kind of get Dr. Deborah going a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Conditioned response and operant conditioning and all that kind of stuff.
She loves that.
Well, I love Pavlov because it's really truthful. I mean, literally pairing two unrelated stimuli and responses, and there you have it. It's like it's, and I use that analogy and metaphor with clients in addiction all the time. You know, you see a billboard selling alcohol, you salivate.
Yeah.
The billboard in and of itself has nothing to do with that response. It's so hard to unpair those things. That's why people relapse so much. So yeah, I'm glad that you brought those up.
Operant conditioning, I think is what it's called, right?
Well, that would be, I think that would be more classical conditioning, Pavlov, and then the operant is getting the reinforcement, either positive or negative reinforcement for a behavior. So if you repeat a behavior over and over again, you continue to get reinforcement, then you're likely to continue to increase that behavior. And then there's the whole gambling thing, which is intermittent variable reinforcement, which is why the gambler will pull that slot machine handle hundreds and hundreds of times because they're rewarded the 10th time, the 20th time, the 5th time, the 490th time, you know, so it's all variable. So it's so hard to extinguish that behavior. And I think so both animals are operating with addiction like crazy.
So yeah, it is. Dr. Deborah, have you had much experience with this gaming addiction that's going on now? I've heard a lot about that lately.
Absolutely, yeah. It's that whole syndrome of reinforcement, and then the whole social arena of that, and, you know, what's normal, what's not normal. It's another epidemic. You have to monitor your young kids,
I know, I was thinking
Kelly,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. If I allowed it, especially my older one, would be on the iPad, like, for 10 hours straight. No problem. Like, he could literally just, you know, play the game and just be on it. It's really scary.
Well, I have to confess, I could be at a blackjack table for
18
hours
that's
straight.
That's true.
And not even remember that I was hungry at all.
Yeah.
It's powerful. I only go once a year.
Right. Exactly. And you're like, I'm no holds bar. I'm just
that's
doing
right.
it.
Nobody talk to me. No. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask if there's any negative side effects with the device.
Oh, good question.
None that have been published or experienced. You know, the FDA, they looked at the device very carefully, and they felt that it was very safe. You know, their main area of concern is public safety, and they felt like the device was safe without any side effects. Now, the only contraindications for the device is if there's psoriasis, a skin condition around the ear, if the patient has a bleeding diathesis, or if they're on blood thinners or something of that nature, because there is a little pin that is attached to the electrode, or lastly, if they have another electrical stimulating device in their bodies, like pacemaker or a spinal cord stimulator or something of that nature.
Yeah, okay.
Those are the three contraindications. But no side effects.
brilliant.
That's great.
And to tell you the truth, I've never really had it not work. And that's what's been so amazing.
That's just it's brilliant.
Amazing.
So taking you back a little bit, because you mentioned a battery and somebody concerned about the battery running out. Is once the battery runs out, you have to get a new device?
Well, usually the battery doesn't run out until the detox is completed. So if you're on a short-acting opiate and the detox period is 5 days, well, if the battery life on most devices is 10 days, then we're covered. So usually the patients have detoxified to the point that their urine screens are negative even before the device is ready to be taken off. Some, you know, they want to keep the device because sometimes, they may have started on opioids for pain relief and they're feeling so good with the device on that they want to keep it on for the entire length of the battery life. So if it's a short acting opioid like heroin or, hydrocodone, oxycodone, then 5 days is enough and the device lasts for 10. If it's buprenorphine or Suboxone, it will cover those as well because that withdrawal period is usually 7 to 10 days and it's right up to the life of the battery of the device.
Okay, but it's essentially a non-rechargeable battery. So when you were talking about like for fibromyalgia or something where you're doing it, you know, over and over again, that would be new devices each time.
Well, there's a little bit of skin penetration from the electrodes, and that could lead to some chronic irritation, some risk of infection. So we wouldn't want it to stay in continuously over an 18-month period. So we would take it off after. And now, we have a prototype that's lasting for 15 days right now, but we haven't put it out in production just yet. Mm-hmm. And we're going to use that one more in a pain arena. But over 15 days, I think, we may run the risk of having some cellulitis or some infection with the pin penetration in the ear, which is a little tiny pin, but still pierces the skin. So I wouldn't want it to stay on for too long a period of time for that reason.
Gotcha.
Well, you have been so fantastic. We've been talking with Dr. Bryant George, and he is a neurosurgeon talking today about the Morph device, which helps opiate addiction withdrawal and detox and things like that.
Brilliant, so, brilliant man, and such a great interviewee. Thank you so much. Is there anything that we missed very quickly for our audience other than we'll give out the website in a moment?
Well, no, I just want to put the word out that there is new technology out there to make detoxification off of opioids a much more humane and comfortable response, and I'm hoping that this will bring a lot of people into treatment now that were reluctant to do so because they were afraid of detox and they have so much anxiety. Remember, Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly, that people, we talked about this condition response. These people that are addicted, they are getting themselves prepared. They know what time they're going to go into withdrawal. And so they have to get their money together. They have to find their dope dealer and they have to go hide somewhere and use. And it's a conditioned response that they're doing over and over and over again. And it's no longer necessary. And the only reason they're doing it is because they don't want to get dope sick.
Right.
And the device will stop you from getting dope sick during the period of time that you're detoxifying. And I'm hoping that it brings people into treatment.
That is beautiful.
Yes, thank you so much.
And people can find out more about this on www.themorphdevice.com. That's M-O-R-P-H, morphdevice.com. Oh, my God. This is
it's fascinating. I know. This is just going to change. It really is. It's going to change.
Life-changing.
It is.
Yeah, for so many people. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and all of your good work.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. It's been a really pleasure, well, experience to talk to you guys and to share some of my experiences with you. And I'm hopeful that we can make a difference in this opioid crisis in America.
Yeah, us too. Thank you again.
Okay. All righty.
Wow.
So next week we have Cindy Stolberg, Feeling Better.
It's good. Kind of goes with this.
Feeling Better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So follow us on Instagram at @2shrinks, Facebook, The Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Our website, docandtherapist.com. And you can email us anytime, docandtherapist@gmail.com.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, have a beautiful week.
You're listening to The Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.